Sup, everybody. Anthony Frieda here. Welcome to Badum Biz. All right. Today on the show, we got Mr. Curious, the curious audiologist. That's right. He's not a musician. He's an actual audiologist. This was very cool because, look, I'm a musician, and if you're a musician, and I'm a music teacher too, my ears are everything. Without my ears, I can't do my job well. Also, Mr. Curious has a podcast out called A Fleeting Frustration. I highly recommend that you guys listen to it. And lastly, remember, I'm doing virtual drum lessons. If you're interested in a virtual drum lesson with me, please email badumbiz@gmail.com. Also, I'm doing drum tracks too. So if you're interested in having drum tracks for your songs, please hit up badumbiz@gmail.com. All right. Please, please enjoy Mr. Curious, the curious audiologist. Badum-biz. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Badum Biz. I'm Anthony Frieda. I got a guest today. I actually have, this is the first guest that has a podcast.
Woo!
So I'm excited. There he is. He's excited too. All right. His name is Mr. Curious.
Hello.
Mr. Curious, welcome.
Thanks for having me. So I'm the Curious Audiologist, and I run a podcast called Fleeting Frustration.
I did your podcast a few weeks ago.
Yes.
I did.
Very popular episode, by the way.
Oh, really? Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Sweet to hear that, man. So, I mean, we know each other from, we went to high school together.
Yeah, we did. We go back.
We go way back. And you've always been positive.
Oh, thank you.
Like, fun to be around. Always, there's always laughs. So, it's so funny. It's just our lives just didn't intersect until the podcasting.
Right.
Because you reached out to me when I started posting. By the way, I want to kind of, I'll give my take on your podcast and why I like it, and then you just go right ahead and into description mode.
Sure, no problem.
The way you describe your podcast to me, and it lit a fire under me. I love the idea, and it wasn't a long podcast. In fact, it was very organized. I filled out like questionnaires just to streamline the information, and it was all about what are your gripes in your profession. What are things that bother you? What are things you would love to fix? And it actually went even deeper than that, the discussion. But I absolutely love that because we're living in a time when there are errors in certain systems, or there are, you know, people make mistakes, maybe even get away with those mistakes. There's not a universal sense of accountability.
So I completely agree. Yeah.
I absolutely loved your idea because now, you know how many, do you know how many different, well, I'm asking you, you probably thought about it. I was like, can you imagine how many different fields that question, just that one question alone, could start so many conversations?
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. It's my favorite like icebreaker too. Like when you're at a party, well, you know, we're not in parties anymore, but when we go back to parties, definitely one of my favorite icebreakers, you know.
Did I hit the nail on the head with the description well enough?
I think so. Yeah, I definitely think so. And thank you for that. The whole idea with the podcast is to create a sense of like positivity for what you do and to create an understanding for people that, you know, I didn't want it to become like a internet rage room, you know, where, you know, I call it like, I invite you to vent, but vent in a positive manner so that people just know how to interact with someone in your profession better. You know, I just want to make ultimately your day easier and everyone in your profession, like they go into work, more people know what to do when they're around them and, you know, to build a community. Stuff like that.
Dude, that, I mean, so this is very, what you just said is so, it so reflects what is needed now in terms of public schooling, for instance.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's a big one. I can't wait to do that episode, by the way.
Oh, dude, it's such a huge deal because what you just said, right? Basically what's happening, this is in the current news right now is that teachers are having to go back into school during this COVID time. And it was, I'll say this in my opinion, I don't know if the schools were given enough time to, with that decision, when it was made, to even come up with a new plan, a completely new plan. In fact, they had to invent guidelines, new guidelines.
And they change every day. And that's the crazy thing now that teachers, because when this whole COVID thing happened, we did the right thing and we closed schools, in my opinion. Because kids really do should come first. But teachers now are learning what healthcare workers like myself, because I never stopped when COVID, hit, that you have to adapt on the fly. And bureaucracy, I mean, teachers know this better than anybody, that bureaucracy messes everything up, because there's just no common sense policies. I remember, when we went to high school, it was a no tolerance for fighting. I mean, you could get the living pulp beat out of you, and God forbid you defend yourself and you're gone too, So
we
stuff
have a,
like that.
We actually have a common acquaintance mm-hmm. who this is a high school story, so I mean, whatever. But
yeah,
this is a good one though. I mean, you just hit the nail. He whatever. Somebody cut the line in front of him in lunch. He was like, What the fuck?
Right, right.
And the kid was just like, okay, you want to start something. So anyway, they both go to their tables. All of a sudden, this guy, our acquaintance, is eating, and he gets he gets jumped by two guys, basically. One of those. And then, now him and his friends are having to defend themselves. Right. Well, there were cameras up, and I remember what happened to this kid, which they both got suspended.
It's ridiculous. It's so crazy.
But here's the thing. It comes down to either I don't want to do the work to think out, to do the work to think of and come up with the language to write it out, an ideal solution to these problems. Mm-hmm. We're just going to come up with a blanket way of doing this, hoping that nobody makes a big deal about it and it just goes away, the problem. And I think that people, tell me if you agree with this,
mm-hmm.
people that make those decisions or creates those ideas usually don't have to see it through.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's easy for them to just write it down, right? And just send them a blast email. And a lot of these people, they're what I call career. They've just been through okay, I'm done grammar school, and I go to middle school, then I go to high school, then I go to college, and then I get my doctoral degree to get my ED or whatever it is, and never really having real world experience. And we all know these kind of people, the people that just aim to be the boss, I could be a really good boss, but have no idea how it really works. They've never spent time in the trenches.
That's right.
And oftentimes those are the people that are unfortunately are just creating the rules, and they get the paychecks and that's it. They go home and they're I go home to my big house, my white picket fence, and I don't have to worry about it because I already sent the email. It's not my problem anymore.
It may reflect America's obsession with status.
Oh, for sure. Hands down. Yeah.
And you kind of know what I mean by that, which is, a position like that, right? Like what you just said. We're talking like administration, right? We're talking VP. We're talking principal of a school. Hey, yep. Even further, right? Superintendent, right? Even board of education members feel that tend to have this
air.
Power that they feel that they can that they have to manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it because my father is actually. Been on the board of ed in the town that we lived in, and the stories he would tell of just he's actually trying to do a good job,
right? And it's just you just don't get listened to. It's what's the point of even being here?
It becomes
why are we a board?
If somebody doesn't like somebody on the board of education, and the person who's not liked for whatever reason comes up with a really good idea, a really good solution to a really big problem. It doesn't matter how good the idea is. In fact, you would think that I'm going to steal that idea because that's right. such a good idea and I'm going to take the credit. No, you know what we're going to do? We're going to vote the opposite because we want to bury this person.
Right.
And it's like, how do we let our world be run that way? Even our small worlds,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's an interesting, that's why I love your podcast idea when you went into detail about, and that's why I mentioned teachers. People are talking shit about teachers complaining, right? Which is, those people really haven't, I'm sure, done the work to put the pants on of a teacher, like just to imagine, right? To even learn what the day of a teacher is like, and then what it would be like. You know, I guess healthcare workers are, it's still dangerous. However, most healthcare workers are in environments where they have the resources to deal with the sick.
Completely agree. I completely agree. You know, the PPE. I mean, is it any surprise to anyone that I'm hearing stories now of teachers having to raise money just like everything else they have to do for supplies for now, not only school supplies, but for PPE, personal protective equipment. It's insane.
Unreal, man. It's unreal. And, you know, I think that's why I hope that as your listenership grows, this, again, all your, it's such a thoughtful idea that little by little, just a little bit of informative, maybe even like a picturing of this is what somebody in this profession's life is like, and these are the problems they face every day. And they actually get, we talked about this on the episode I did with you, which is nothing frustrates me more than unnecessary problems that don't need to be there that get in the way of me being effective at my job.
That, mm-hmm.
And then who really suffers? I don't suffer. I still get paid. But the client, the student, suffers
right.
from that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that was cool. That was a cool episode, by the way. That was really
cool. Thank you. Yeah, like I said, very popular episode, and it's attracting a lot of new guests, actually. People reference your episode to me when I'm, like, talking to them behind the scenes, so thank you for being on it.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on it. I wanted to have you on this, not just as a return favor, but mm-hmm. what you do for a living is fascinating to me. Can you go into that?
Oh, yeah, no problem. I'm very excited for you to share your audience with me because you have some, you know, very talented people in the musical world, yourself included, that clearly when you're talking music, like hearing is a big thing. And I myself am an audiologist. And for those who are not really familiar with what an audiologist does, because I wasn't prior to sending in my application to grad school, like I didn't know what it was. I saw YouTube videos of people getting their cochlear implants activated. And I was like, dude, where do I sign up to even do that? Like, what even is that, you know? And I saw the word audiologist in the YouTube descriptions, like, you know, like when you go into like right before the comments or whatever.
Yeah.
So I looked that up. I was like, that's pretty dope. I've never heard of that. But here I am now. And so what I do is I diagnose hearing issues and balance issues. So the two, not just hearing, but we're also balance. A lot of your balance actually comes from your ears. So we deal with a lot of musicians, like a lot. Like I've seen people who played pretty much every instrument that I could think of, or, you know, every like area, like brass, woodwind, percussions, all of that. I've seen them all in my office. And if you do it long enough, I have to say it's not a good, it's usually, you know, what I'll say is if someone's been doing it for 30 plus years, the chances of them having normal hearing are slim to none.
Yeah. And are you talking about general play, like even a classical musician playing, let's say, the clarinet for a living, even them?
Yes. Even them.
Okay, so and normal hearing. Can you give a context to define what normal hearing would be?
Yeah, sure, no problem. So when you go into my little my fun little, you know, noise treated booth and you're listening for the beeps and the boops, and I'm telling you to press the button, even if you thought you heard it, I want you to press the button, okay? That's graphed on a chart called an audiogram. Now, for us podcasters, I know audiogram means something else. Yeah. It's that thing that, you know, shows the waveforms in your voice, and you use it kind of like to tease an episode or whatever. Yep. But an audiogram in my world, the professional side of it is, it is your prescription, we'll say. Okay. So when you hear the beeps and the boops, if you see circles, that means your right ear. If you see X's, that means your left ear.
Okay.
So just think red, right, round, because usually it's red circles. So that's your right ear. And in our clinic, we use 25 dBHL. That's our standard for normal. In other clinics, it's 20. It's 5 decibels. Who cares? So what that graph is actually a normative graph. It was, in my opinion, a little outdated because it was done in like the World's Fair in like the early 1900s. And what they did was they tested thousands of people at the World's Fair who they thought were young, had no noise, you know, no history of noise exposure. And so that's how it's graphed on the chart. So anything that's 25 dB or better, you have normal hearing. And of course, you know, we test you in different scenarios like speech, because speech is a big thing, right? Say the word this, say the word that, how well you do with that. Because if you bomb on a simple task, like say the word pick, or something like that. Okay. Someone with a high frequency hearing loss will say pig, or, you know, because they can't hear the k, that plosive of the CK. So if you bomb at that, then you know you're really doing bad, right? Okay. Like it's the easiest scenario that I could possibly put you in. I put you in this super quiet booth. You know what to expect, and you're still getting it wrong, right? So like, so that's what, those are some of the things that we look out for.
I see. Okay. So interest, and it's so interesting. Again, like I mentioned, hey, listener, hey, musicians out there, even you, clarinet, you wind instruments or vocalists, you still, what Sir Mr. Curious here says, you will suffer some, just a little bit of damage. You are reduced.
It's not unfair to call it damage.
Okay.
But some kind of hearing loss to say.
Hearing loss. That's the word. By the way, I'm calling you Mr. Can we talk about why you're called Mr. Curious?
Yeah, sure. So I'm getting married at the end of the month. Woohoo, finally. It's been, I tell you, anyone trying to get married out there, I would not recommend it during a pandemic. It's not something I recommend.
I have a couple friends. It's like a nightmare. They had it all planned, and
oh god, we had to move our reception twice. I'm Mr. Curious because at the end of the month, I'm gonna have a Mrs. Curious, and we're gonna do a couples episode talking about the frustrations that we had, you know, with this whole wedding situation and leading up to, you know, where we finally get married at the end of the month. So.
And you also you also want to kind of be a little, have like a disguise as your podcast, which I also really dig.
Yeah. Because the whole premise of the podcast is that everyone's anonymous, including me. You know, when I talk to guests, I don't mind having my video on. It's fine. You know, it makes it more natural. But as far as identities are concerned, it's more of just like, I just want everyone to feel comfortable. It's like two strangers having an honest conversation. And what I found is that people are way more honest when you give them a mask. They'll say anything, you know?
So, I like that. Because, you know, they might be working in the corporate world. And you know what I mean? And dude, it's like that's part of an interview process or hiring process, I should say. They just try to find your footprint.
They look you up on Facebook. They look you up on LinkedIn and all that. Actually, one of the patients, like, oh my God, here I am. One of my guests she worked for HR for a huge corporation. Everyone knows this corporation. I can't say what it is, but it's one of the FANG companies. So FANG stands for Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. Okay. So exactly, you know, and she worked for HR for them, you know, so.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So definitely, if you give them a mask, it's a lot safer for everybody.
I love it. I love it. And you know, yeah, you know, people are going to be more honest and transparent. I mean, it's funny. Some people be like, well, how do you know if the person's talking truth? It's like, I don't know. I feel like the depth of the, your podcast, creates the, creates words.
It's like a safe space, kind of.
Safe space. Yeah. That's right. A safe space that you can, they can talk, you can get down to the details of the expertise. You're a smart guy. So you can, you know, you could ask the right questions.
Thank you.
You know what I mean? So I'm going to keep saying that I love your podcast.
idea. I appreciate it.
I really enjoy it. All right. So back to the ears.
Yeah. So the thing with musicians and hearing in general, and from, you know, I'm not trying to be preachy here. It's just a kind suggestion from someone who's worked with a lot of musicians already and have fit musicians with, you know, hearing aids to get them back on track. What I have to say is, man, the thing with hearing loss is that you really don't want it. Clearly no one wants hearing loss, right? But is especially from a musician standpoint,
yeah.
Because your frequency response, your tuning, that all gets thrown off. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say 10 people so far that have been like very, very heavy into music. Like if they're not at their day jobs, they are performing music, you know?
Okay.
And I fit one or two professionals as well. And they both, I think, played the clarinet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's funny. I think one of them
played, the money.
Yeah, like a clarinet cool. And like a flute. And then like one of them was just like clarinet.
Okay.
And what I can say, what I want to first start off with is that hearing loss isn't like when you're losing your vision. When you're losing your vision, like it's really evident, right? Like you're driving suddenly like, huh, I can't read like the exit markers or whatever like I used to, or I have to get really close to the exit sign to figure out where I am. Like that's dangerous. And the threat of that is like, it's so immediate, right? Like,
yeah.
Oh man, like I didn't see that at all. Like I could have died right then and there. But for hearing loss, everyone always tends to like, I'm not going to say like push it aside or like, but it's definitely devalued when it comes next to vision.
Okay.
Right? And the thing with hearing loss is that for the most part, unless it happens overnight, which I'll get to that in a second.
Sure.
It's insidious, meaning that it happens over years and years and years of abuse, right? Not just musicians. Like I'll have people who like say they've worked in a garbage truck for 20 years and those things can get loud, especially when they back up that beep, beep, beep. Dude, it's so abusive.
That's right.
Construction workers, people in the military. My practice is really close to one of the largest airplane manufacturers. So people who work there, dude, they, oh my God, when they're testing like turbines and stuff, like their ears take a beating. So anyway, my point was, is that you don't realize that it's going so much like, you know, as quickly as you do your vision, because you make up for it in certain ways. It's, oh, I'll turn the volume up, or what they said wasn't that important. Or we all do this right now, even like we'll pretend we heard them and go, like, oh, haha, and just laugh it off. And people are like, well, you didn't answer my question. Or like, that was weird. Like, it didn't match.
Yeah.
So like, that's the first thing with hearing loss is that it's insidious. Like you don't know you're getting it really until suddenly it becomes a problem, right? So oftentimes for musicians, when they start realizing it's a problem, aside from their family going, you got to get your hearing checked. Like, God damn it, Frank, like go to the doctor. Like
Sounds like you said my grandfather's name. I've heard that before.
Oh, really? you know, but when it comes to musicians, especially like vocalists, they're like, I'm singing off key or I'm missing certain notes.
Yep.
You know, that's what I've noticed, like a lot of them have been saying, or like, just like people are saying, like, I'm singing louder than I need to. in certain parts because they can't hear themselves. So that's like the tell right there.
Can I ask you something? Because I, you know, I had like a music technology course in college. The guy was a really good professor, actually. But he mentioned something about, you ever get that ringing in your ear? And we're like, yeah, of course. He goes, that's the last time you're going to hear that frequency. Is that true or no?
No.
Okay, that, thank God.
Yeah, that is my favorite wives' tale. And thank you for, you actually segued into something that I was going to get into too. So what that ringing in your ear is something called tinnitus. Okay, it's an umbrella term. And some people call it tinnitus.
I've heard that.
It's like, it's really potato, potato. The thing with saying like tinnitus, like that itis, in the medical world, that kind of suggests an inflammation. So when you're like bursitis or appendicitis, you know, like your appendix is inflamed. Yes. But with tinnitus, nothing's really inflamed. So that's why we say tinnitus, not tinnitus. But, you know, you're not wrong if you say tinnitus, whatever. So that is my favorite wives' tale. A lot of like old school musicians believe that, and so do a lot of audio engineers for some reason. They all just think like that's the last time. Wow. So I mean, happy you brought that up.
I'm telling you, like, and there'd be stretches, right? There'd be stretches of time where whatever the circumstances are, I'm performing a lot. Maybe the lessons that, you know, when you play it, you know what, we should talk about this too. It's all, it's all relative sound. So, you know, a trumpet in a decently sized room treated decently.
Right, right.
Is fine. It's not abrasive. In a small room.
Yeah.
It's damaging. You can, you can actually feel, it's funny, you can feel the frequencies hit your ear.
Yep.
So, but that, for whatever reason, I would be getting these every day. I would be getting these, ringing of a frequency, and I would go, "Oh, another one gone.
another one bites the dust."
That's right. That's right. So good to know that that's bullshit. I'm so happy to hear that. I'm so happy to hear that.
In a way, though, there is some truth to it. Okay.
Okay.
So, let me get into a little bit of like the tinnitus, because that's a big thing that musicians also say. It's a big thing people with hearing loss in general always complain about, right?
Okay.
So it's not uncommon to have tinnitus in the same frequency region as your hearing loss.
Okay.
So say, you could Google it, anyone listening right now, just Google noise-induced hearing loss and go to the images tab and see what you find. And what I'll tell you right now is you're going to see something that's normal, right? Like we discussed, above 25 decibels on the graph. And then around 4,000 hertz, you're going to see a big dip, and then it's going to recover after 4,000 hertz. That's called a noise notch. And it's not uncommon for people to have tinnitus. If I were to match the tinnitus and like play that tone, they'd be like, "Oh, that sounds exactly like my ringing." And
for audio mixing people, this is what he's talking about. Upper mids.
Yes.
Upper mids. So like, I guess that's where your slappy, you know, snare drum, that's where you would boost. I'm getting nerdy. Go on.
No, that's perfect. Dude, that's perfect.
But yeah, like that's what you're talking about. I've been working and mixing, so I understand exactly what you're talking about, and I could totally visualize the notch.
Yep.
And we wind up doing that while we mix, actually.
Oh, like compensating for it?
Yeah, in this room, I have way too much of these, you know. So anyway, go on. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that was great. But it's not that you can't hear that frequency. It just means that you need more volume in order to hear it.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? So like, there is some truths to that wives' tale. Like, you know, it's not like you can never hear that frequency again. It's just that you need more, you just need more volume to compensate for your auditory system not being able to be so sensitive to that frequency.
Gotcha.
Is essentially what's going on. It's not that you can't do anything about it either. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves. So like, say you're a musician and you're up late in the night, and it's usually during the quiet hours that you hear tinnitus, like early in the morning after a long day. And stress is a big exacerbator of tinnitus too. So if you've had like a long day of teaching like kids, like you said in the episode, like babysitting kids, you know, and you're like, oh, these goddamn parents, like, you know, you're going to have tinnitus that night, I bet, you know? So stress is a big exacerbator.
I've had that where you're just, or this is another thing we'll talk about too, is this an example of tinnitus where I would play a show, mm-hmm. and it would be like a cover band show, right? So it would be loud, dude. It would be so loud. What happens throughout the night is the guitar players keep turning up, and then the vocalist keeps going to the sound guy, turn up. Everybody's volume's going up, but there's no equalization happening, which is really what you're talking about, is that frequency area needs to be, there's a dip there, so we need to boost that area, not all of the frequencies. So at the end of the night, I've been bashing. I actually couldn't play with earplugs because I couldn't hear the articulation.
Yes.
So now my ears are totally exposed to this, right? And I know that there are drummers and musicians out there that are like, big fucking deal. But this is real shit. At the end of the night, I'm driving home. And after like months of this, I realized that on the drive home, if it's 1 a.m, 2 a.m, I should feel tired. Especially I exerted myself, right? And meaning I should feel it in my eyes, like, okay, I can go to sleep soon. But usually what will happen is after those types of shows is I don't feel tired in my eyes. My body feels tired. I'm actually fucking beaming awake. I'm wired awake. And I have to actually, when I even go home and I'm in my quiet room, the humming in my head is insane that I can't get to sleep. And it takes like another 2 hours for even that to calm down. So is this an example of tinnitus?
Yes, it's an example of not only tinnitus, but what we call in audiology, a temporary threshold shift. So if I were to test your hearing prior to a show and then test you after, I wouldn't be surprised if all your results like were poor right after the show.
Really?
It's just a thing that, because you stress the auditory system, and I'll get to that in a little bit, like what you can do to protect yourself in a sense as a musician. That's what we call a temporary threshold shift.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it's temporary for the most part until it's just repeated abuse and then becomes permanent, unfortunately.
Well, this is where when I realized that, I immediately thought about, that's why rock stars self-medicate. When they're on these large tours, large arenas and stadiums, loud amplification everywhere.
Right.
They can't get to sleep. You know, even the adrenaline from the show, they just can't rest. And totally makes sense to me when I started to experience that, even on a minor level. Like I'm just a guy who got paid $100 that night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's cool to know more details about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So just to recap whatever we just said about tinnitus, so far, I'd like to say, because I'd like to say what you can do about it. Tinnitus, it's just an umbrella term, because some people don't say it's ringing all the time. Oh, sometimes it's buzzing. Sometimes it's, sometimes it sounds like the ocean or something like that. You know, it's just an umbrella term. So when I say tinnitus, that's what I mean. It doesn't just have to be ringing. Okay.
Got you. Okay.
Or some people say it sounds like static or something like that. Like,
okay.
If at any point, for anyone listening out there, if at any point your tinnitus is in sync with your heartbeat, go see a doctor, because that could be something more serious.
Say that. Okay? Say that one more time. Sorry.
Yeah. If your tinnitus is in sync with your heartbeat, if you hear your heartbeat in your ear, go see a doctor.
Oh.
Because it can be something more serious. Okay.
Oh,
yeah. So that's just
I've experienced there. That, but not like,
if it's like a constant thing, like if it's something constant, that, yeah, like even if you just woke up and, you know, when you just wake up, your heartbeat's not like racing unless you had like a really terrible dream or whatever, you know, or you got like woken up by like a truck horn in your ear, you know, like, but it, generally, like if you wake up peacefully and you're hearing your heartbeat, like, bum, 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 you know, normal day, then you should probably see a doctor.
Okay? I see.
But what I was going to say about tinnitus and treatment for it is that, and I, oh God, I'm going to sound so, it's going to sound so bad when I say this, but like, hey, there's no cure for tinnitus.
Okay.
Okay. But that doesn't mean that there aren't ways to manage it. Cause I hate when, like, cause you could go to like your general practitioner or your, you know, your family doctor and you say, hey, I got ringing. And I hate these old school like doctors that honestly should just retire. They, oh, there's nothing you could do about it anyway. It's like, ugh. Why would you ever tell someone that? Because like, I've seen patients that like, dude, they've got like bags under their eyes because they haven't slept because this ringing's keeping them up. And they're like literally on the point of like suicide. Like, I'm not even joking. Like, why would you tell someone that? Like, who, you know, like that's so insensitive as like a medical professional. Like, why would you even start there?
I would say that bedside manner lacks in some fields, man.
Big
and I've
time.
I've experienced it too, man. It's
big time.
It's you know what it is? Is, you know, I understand. Oh, I'm a doctor. This is, I just tell you what the problem is and whatever. It's more than that, dude. And all of our jobs are more than that. You know, all of our jobs. Yeah. If you think the checklist of what the job requirements are or what you are expected to do, if you think that is it, you know, I don't know. You might not be right for the job. You got to do more, and you got to be you got to be a fucking person. Sorry, I had a bad experience with that because I had carpal tunnel syndrome, and unfortunately, I went to a hand surgeon. I didn't realize that was a bad idea.
You're right. he's just looking at you objectively, is what it is.
He was looking.
This is what we got to fix. This is, you know, this is it.
It's like he wanted to slice me open, and he was
You know, and didn't surgeons are so into that. Like, that's what they want to do so bad because that's what they went to school for. You know, like that's what they know to do, so they want to get to it right away.
Makes sense. It makes I'll forgive him. All right, go on. So you were talking about tinnitus being so bad that the okay, cool.
So like, you know, don't listen to people when they say that. Like, there's nothing you can do. Yes, there's things you can do. See an audiologist. See someone who specializes in tinnitus. Audiology is just like any other like medical degree. We don't have a medical degree. Like, we don't get a medical. We didn't go to med school. We have a doctorate degree in audiology. But people specialize in certain fields. Like, some people specialize in educational audiology, like working in a school for the deaf or something like that. Or some people specialize in like cochlear implants and stuff like that. Some people will specialize in tinnitus management. Okay. Oh, wow. So one of the big things whenever someone comes to me just for tinnitus, and what I always tell people is there are things you can do. Number one, analyze the day you had. Cause like some people are, it's not there all the time. So analyze the day you had. If you had a really stressful day, don't be surprised that you have tinnitus at the end of it. Okay, because what we know about tinnitus is that it activates the same part of your brain as stress, like the auditory pathway, like it just like rubs through that part of your brain.
Interesting.
So that's why. The thing is, I'm like tripping over myself because I'm so excited about this.
Go.
I'm
excited, man.
You have to, like I said, analyze your day. If it's been a hard day, then you know that's probably what's causing part of it, right? So that's step one. Step two is sometimes being in a super quiet room will make it worse. So what I suggest is playing what we call fractal sounds. Like, what are fractal sounds? Fractal sounds are sounds that are repetitive, but not too repetitive. So things like corny things like waves crashing on a beach, or like birds chirping in like the Amazon, like, you know, those old, like, you remember like East Meets West kind of soundtracks.
Yes.
But those sounds in and of itself are not enough. You have to pair that with like relaxation strategies. So like what you were saying earlier, like with these stars that like have to self-medicate or whatever to get away. Like, I'm not surprised, like you said, I completely agree with what you said, that they do that. That's probably a lot of it has to do with some ringing that they're dealing with that they don't talk about.
I bet you they don't even, that's the thing. When you really become aware of something, and I've noticed you can kind of get hypersensitive to it.
Yes.
And then obsess about when you feel it, how often you feel it. And I guess those guys are just, you know, these people are just like, next show. Let's party. But it catches up to you, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I've had a guy who, he wouldn't name who he was touring with, but he was like, believe me, you know who. But he was like part of like their equipment. He like set up the equipment before every show and like helped tune everything for like 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's just like, if I could just tell younger me to just be a little bit more careful, I would, you know?
Man, so now what? Okay. So do you want to continue talking about like treatment? Do you want to talk about prevention possibly? Where do you want to go with that, man?
I just want to say one more thing about tinnitus, and then I'll get into just general everyday for the musician, like what you can do to help protect yourself.
Perfect.
So when it comes to tinnitus, and if you take nothing else away from this discussion that we have today, everyone listening, is that you just have to, I hate to say it, you just have to, because it's not that easy, okay? I understand that. But you have to make the switch in your head to say, this sound that I'm hearing, this phantom sound that no one else can hear but me, I know it's there. I'm not crazy, right? You have to understand that it is a sound that is not going to harm you. That switch alone is huge.
Okay.
It is huge for anyone dealing with this chronically, okay? So that's like the main thing I just want to say for everyone listening out there who might be dealing with this, that make that switch in your head. You'll notice that it will make a difference. And if that doesn't help, go see a specialist. There are other things that we can try. But that's a really good starting point.
That is powerful what you just said, because it's so realistic, down to earth, concrete floor. Like, that is truth, because a psychologist would say the same thing about a thought. Like, I feel like I'm going to get fired from my job because my boss looked at me weird the other day.
Right.
You know, that could be a legitimate feeling and belief that somebody has. But from the outside, you know, the therapist could be like, you're actually not in danger at all. Even if you do get fired, you're not in danger. And that what you just said is so powerful. I would say people should say that about anything that they're not truly, their health is not suffering from.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's powerful, man.
You will it, you know, you, in a sense, like you are your thoughts. So
that's right.
If you just start from there, then I think everything else is not that it will fall into place, but it just makes it easier to.
Man. So one other thing that I've heard about the ear, the inner ear, mm-hmm. and when you talked about balance, you know, I think my father years ago had vertigo for a little bit, for a couple of days, and he explained what it was about. I actually didn't see, he hit it pretty well, but he explained what it was like. And I was like, really? He's like, I didn't know, like, you know where your balance is, you know where gravity is, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know during that period of time, and it turned my stomach, you know. He's like, I couldn't lay down, I couldn't get comfortable. And now, I might have heard it on, it might have been another podcast, but is mm-hmm. it something about there are these crystals or something? what is this?
Yeah, that's the most common kind of vertigo. Vertigo, when you say vertigo, that just, you're describing a symptom. Because when people say, oh, I have the vertigo, it's like saying, like, you know, I have the pox. It doesn't really describe anything.
Okay.
It's just a symptom. So vertigo is a symptom. And vertigo is, it's really, sometimes it's used interchangeably with like dizziness, lightheadedness, like imbalance. Vertigo, true vertigo, and what your father was saying, and it sucks. Like, true vertigo sucks, because it takes, you don't know right from left sometimes. You don't know where up from down is, because it literally takes the feet out from under you. So vertigo is characterized by room spinning. And I could speak for myself when I say this. I had like too much to drink one night, and at the end of the night, like, the room is just spinning and you're like on the floor, you know.
Every time I have too much to drink, that's what I feel.
Yeah, so that's
every
vertigo.
Time. That's, I know, vertigo. That feeling. I usually throw up and
you're
fine.
Yes. Yep.
But that, no joke, it feels like you're on a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that you had too much you have too much stuff in your stomach.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
So that's vertigo. Yeah. That's true vertigo when the room is spinning. The crystals that he's talking about, it's called BPPV. And that's really common after the age of 55. So I don't want to get too deep into that, but like the crystals. It stands for benign paroxysmal positional vertigo. So that's why we just say BPPV. It's just a lot easier.
Benign is the key word though, right?
Benign. Yeah. It's very common. After, like I said, when you turn like 55, and the inner ear, the cochlea and the semicircular canals in your inner ear, they act like an internal gyroscope. So if you turn your head like this, if you do like a yaw maneuver, like think of like touching your ear to your shoulders like that, that's okay. A yaw maneuver. And when you're walking forward and backward, these canals let us know like, hey, we're moving that way. And they use like these little crystals that usually hang out at the base of each canal. But what happens is those crystals get loose sometimes. So when you're moving your head, the fluids in your inner ear are still moving, except now the crystal ain't in the right place. So your body picks up on that and goes, whoa, where are we, right? Because your gyroscope, your accelerometer inside your head is not in the right place.
The way you just explained that is fascinating. I kind of understand it way better.
Yeah, so that's a sense. So the treatment is like physical therapy usually. And it's just a bunch of movements that you could look it up on YouTube if you wanted. It's called the Epley maneuver for the most part.
Epley?
Sometimes, yeah, the E-P-L-E-Y Epley maneuver. That's usually what you treat it with. Sometimes if it's a different, because there's three canals, 90% of the time it's that one canal that the Epley maneuver is for. Okay. But other times it's not. And you know, I'm not going to go into like what differentiates all that. But for the most part, if you're curious about it, if you're listening, just Google Epley maneuver. And yeah, check it out. And that's what we would do to like help that out.
Wow, man.
Don't drive.
Do not. Yeah. Don't go faster than 5 miles per hour.
Yeah. Don't get on the road with the rest of us.
Oh, my God. It's so funny because that is something, and I've heard it. You know what? It was on a podcast too, and I heard about somebody else having a bad case of vertigo for like over a week, and no sleep, couldn't eat really. I mean, just constant discomfort and a type of discomfort that you can't find anything.
There's no solace for it.
Like. There's no position you can get in to escape this discomfort.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, like
nauseous.
Like BPPV is, I hate to say harmless for the most part, but it's less severe than other forms of like other pathologies that give you vertigo. Like something like Meniere's disease. Like you're literally on the floor spinning for 4 or 5 hours and vomiting the whole time. Like I've had patients tell me with like actual Meniere's disease, like I had to crawl to the bathroom and throw up because if I stood up, it would be worse. And I've had like, I've had like patients like had to go to the bathroom on themselves because they couldn't make it anywhere kind of deal.
That's real life, man. It's gross, but it's real life, man. I mean,
yeah.
So how does Meniere's disease, you just said, right? That's what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
How does that develop?
Again, without going into like too much detail, it's just your inner ear has two different, it's got two different fluids. It's got one that's filled with potassium and one that's filled with sodium. And they're usually kept apart really neatly in your inner ear. But the lining in that inner ear, for whatever reason, it ruptures and then the fluids mix. So like, and it's not supposed to mix. Oh. So that's what's causing that hours long, you know, spinning. Yeah.
What could rupture that inner lining?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question. Oftentimes, it's more sodium. So if you have Meniere's disease, your doctor will be like, lay off the salt, you know, lay off the salty stuff. Mm-hmm.
Holy shit. So now we're talking about diet.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you know. So, like, again, like, when we were talking about vertigo, like it just depends on what's causing it. Like vertigo is just a symptom. You want to go what's causing, like what's the root cause?
Root cause.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which, if we go back to, you know, talking about being effective at your job, yeah, don't just treat the symptoms, treat, you know, try yeah. to solve the root cause. Wow, man. Because that, I will say, every time I've heard a story about vertigo as a symptom, that is, even for a day, it sounds like a nightmare to me. Yeah. And I always think about that I'm more susceptible to it because I drum for a living or whatever. That has always has me nervous. But I wear earplugs when I'm, especially when I'm in a small room playing drums.
Thank you. Thank you. And your body will thank you like 20 years from now.
Yeah. And so there is one. Okay. There is one thing I want to ask you about. In my experience wearing earplugs, I'm not going to lie. I will say the first 10 years of playing drums and percussion, I probably didn't take care of my ears like I do now.
Yeah,
or like
which
I have
fair.
Done in the last 10 years.
Right.
When I started using earplugs, the typical things that people say, you know, the ear where the earplug sits, the skin and the stretching gets uncomfortable. Sometimes I get like an itchy ear because of maybe whatever, or I get like acne in there, you know, things
yeah,
like
yeah.
that, symptoms like that. Or this is a big one. Like I said before, everything just sounds muffled and I can't hear the articulation of the notes
yeah.
or somebody's voice when they're speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Or singing. And I'll say that there are products that have come out that are not that expensive. They may be a little bit more expensive than your typical in-reach, cheaper earplugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not talking cheaper earplugs like those squishy orange ones, which, to be honest with you, I think are bullshit. But, I mean, there's something, but for what I do, they're bullshit.
Right.
I'm going to shout out this company because they have never failed me. They've helped me so much. Ear Razors, I think they're called.
I know what you're talking about.
You know
yeah.
They fit really well. They fit. You actually don't feel them, how they sit. They don't muffle. I guess they filter out harmful frequencies, maybe. I guess that's what it does. And then... like I said before, you know, even with earplugs that kind of muffled, right? I still would be wired, and I would still feel that vibration at the end of the night. But with these ear razors, I'm not lying to you. I was actually falling asleep on the way home. You know, which is always a good sign. If my eyes are tired and I feel like sleeping, that's when I know a product is working. So, you know, I mean, and now I use like this company called D-Bud, and they really have a crazy, unbelievably small, but the amount of like work under a microscope they had to do to get these certain filters,
yeah.
I mean, it's unreal, and they're great, and they even have like these little sliders, so you can go for complete muffling.
Oh, they have sliders.
Slide
in there.
It out. And you get the filter, and they're great.
Right.
So,
have you ever had them custom made for you?
You know, I've thought about it because I have musician friends that like really play professionally.
Yeah.
Like that is their gig, and they're on big stages in front of big sound systems, and they need that.
Yeah,
they've said it's the best decision I ever made. It's, you know, for me right now, it's maybe a little bit outside my price range.
Well, what I have to say about that is, so thank you for bringing up the hearing protection, because I did want to talk about like what musicians can do to help protect themselves on a daily. Mm-hmm. So definitely what you're saying, like something is better than nothing. I completely agree with what you're saying. So musicians, there's a difference between in-ear monitors and musicians' plugs. Mm-hmm. So musicians' plugs, they're both custom made to you. So in terms of comfort, there will be nothing more comfortable because it's only you can wear them. Like we take an impression of your ear mold. That is unique. That is one of one in the world. And you can put different, like you said, filters. So the thing with the filters, a musician's filters specifically and what makes those unique compared to like those cheapo foam ones that you were saying, mm-hmm. is that they attenuate, meaning they block sound equally across the frequency spectrum.
Okay.
Or at least most of the frequency spectrum. So for those foam plugs, what you're getting is a lot of the high frequencies are actually not going through, but the lows are still going through, especially you as a percussionist, because what people don't realize is bone conduction. So bone conduction is actually how Beethoven was able to play what he was playing. People don't know this. People just assume he was completely deaf. That's not true. If we were to do a test on him now, he would probably have some what we call vibrotactile responses, right? He actually attached something to his teeth to the piano. So that's how he was able to play through bone conduction. Yeah. So what people don't realize is that even though you are protecting your ears, and as I was talking about you, Frida, like even, you know, you're protecting your ears, you're doing the right thing, you as a percussionist are still getting some kind of exposure because the vibration is going to go right to your ear. It travels up.
Man, this is curious. Just drop some knowledge. Like, I feel like I want to have one of those. Bam, bam, bam. Like, no joke, dude. I've taken 3 fucking courses of music history and I've never heard that fact.
Yeah.
I love what you just said because I've heard this. It's always seemed like a rumor. It always seemed like this legend, like, oh, he was deaf and he put a horn to his ear or something. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about vibration, which sound is.
Yes, exactly. And they're just sounds in the air. They're just vibrations in the air.
Instruments in his ear just weren't vibrating. So he found a way to get vibration to those areas, basically.
Correct. They use bone conduction. Yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, even though like you're doing the right thing and wearing it, like there just so you know, there is still some exposure going on there. And that's why, like,
I'm sure
people in firearms, like I have a lot of people in firearms that they're still wearing hearing protection, but guess what? 20, 30 years of that, you're still going to have that noise notch that I was talking about because of the vibration.
Of course.
Yeah. So what I was saying about the custom molded earplugs, and, you know, I will get you them at cost, Frida. So, you know, you let me know. I will get those for you. I will take your impressions for you, and you're going to get them at cost.
I am interested.
Yeah, I would highly recommend them. And the thing, like I said, not only just the frequency response, not only the comfort, but they can be made out of different materials. So, like, if you are someone who has very sensitive skin, then, you know, we can make it like a hypoallergenic material for you.
Wow.
And what I always suggest, if, you know, you're listening to this and you go, huh, maybe I should go see my audiologist and get some musician's plugs, do it. Get them in an obnoxious ass color. The reason I say this is because I want them in black. Okay. You have a black gig bag. You're going to throw them in your gig bag. Good luck finding them ever again. So, like, that's what I mean. Get them like bright green, orange. Yeah.
Smart. So fucking smart. Actually, you know what? That is a reason I've thought in the past of, I'm not spending that amount of money on earplugs. They're going to get lost. But that's a great, okay.
Yeah, make them obnoxious colored. And they range from about $200 to $300. So yeah, they are not cheap. You know, they're definitely not cheap pieces of equipment. But hit me up, dude. I will be happy to make some ear molds for you next time I'm up.
Can I ask you now? Mm-hmm. Can I ask you? Because I have in-ear monitors. They're not the best by any means. Yeah. They're maybe $200, $300 at most. They're sure, mm-hmm. sure that company.
Sure, yeah.
They're, you know, you immediately hear why you should have spent more money.
Yes.
And you feel it too.
Yeah, with inner ear monitors, like you do get what you pay for, unfortunately. Those are one of those things that, like, I remember reading an interview with an audiologist. He has a company in Chicago that he specializes just in that. And he was saying, like, you know, you made it to the big time when you're, you know, ordering through him, because he only sells like $1,500, $2,000, like, inner ear monitor, you know, like that's like a rite of passage for a lot of people, is getting these 15. And honestly, you do get what you pay for, I have to say.
Can I ask, because when I've used them in the past, I've always had a fear of, because it's happened in my home recording process, not bad, but like where, oh, fuck, I accidentally, you know, turned a knob or something like that. You get this jolt of, they're isolating, basically. In-ear monitors, they basically isolate you from the rest of the world in terms of your hearing. So you're only hearing what's coming through those speakers inside of your ear. In fact, they're so deep in your ear, it's a little fucking weird at first. Mm-hmm. You gotta get used to them. Especially if they're not like molded to your ear to seem like they fit, right? And so I've always had this fear of on a gig and there's a sound person that I don't know and I want to use, I'm always like, should I even bother using in-ear monitors tonight? So most of the time I've gone, I don't know this person. So I just don't want any mistakes to, you know, I don't need some sharp frequency for like 2 seconds. And I'm like, you know, fighting to get them out of my ear. Now, I guess number one would be, because they're so far in your ear and they're isolating, mm-hmm. how much more damage could something like what I just said happening, even for 2 seconds, how much damage could that do?
It's hard to create a hard and fast rule for something like that.
Okay.
The thing with, and this is my last point for actually like hearing protection, and I'm glad you mentioned that, is giving yourself a break, and it determines like the levels that you've had. So what I could suggest for anyone who is in extended periods of noise for a long time is give yourself a break. Literally get up from the room and take 15 minutes and let your ears recover. Okay. Right. And how do I know when something's too loud? It's not perfect. I mean, it's not like a professional instrument, but take your smartphone and get a sound level meter in the room. And a lot of these sound level meter apps, they have like an averaging. So for like that hour,
I'll do it right now.
If it's over 85 dBA on average for that hour, you need to take 15 minutes at least. And so it's like OSHA rules, essentially. You know, the people that do like construction, like rules and everything. You'd follow the same guidelines. So it's, you have the time for every 5 decibels more that you're in. So like, say you're in a room that has 85 decibels of noise, right?
Okay.
You're allowed to spend an hour in there before taking a break.
Okay.
Okay. If it's 90 decibels for an hour, you're allowed to spend 30 minutes in there before taking a break. If it's 95, 15, and so on and so forth. And after 85 decibels, you should be wearing hearing protection.
Wow.
So if it's reaching 85 decibels, you really should be protecting yourself. So that's like the real easiest thing. So to get back to your question about the inner ear monitors, it all depends on how loud is it in there in your little ear chamber, right? If it's approaching dangerous noises, then you don't want to be, you know, doing it for too long. As far as that one burst of noise, you know, I've seen patients where they report like, oh, like I was changing a tire and, you know, it didn't explode, but it made like this really like sharp, like kind of like the air coming out. And yeah, we see like a dip in, you know, so some people that's happened to, and you know, it's not, it all depends on the person, unfortunately.
Right, mostly, probably.
Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's permanent. Yeah. So, you know,
okay, and so then let me ask you this question, because this is back before I met you, actually. I was maybe like 13 and like an idiot, me and that like next door neighbor were lighting off little firecrackers. Right? And like idiots, why am I holding it and he's lighting it?
Yeah.
Right. And he lit it too close down the, I guess would be the fuse or the wick.
The fuse. Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. And it exploded in my hand.
Oh God.
There were such minor fire. So that wasn't a problem, the actual explosion, but the sound.
Right.
And I actually remember it was on my left side, I think. And I remember my left ear, no joke. Tell me if this makes sense to you. Do you remember the old TVs? And you would turn them on and you would hear the frequency.
Yes.
Right? You always actually knew without even having your eyes open. in the next room if a TV was on.
If a TV, yes.
Frequency,
yes.
Right?
Yep.
So for months, I'm not joking with you. I actually started to get a little concerned. For months, I couldn't hear that frequency.
Oh, no.
Like usually you'll hear that this is back in the day before flat screens. But mm-hmm. you turn on a TV, you hear like a tick, and then then you immediately hear that frequency, very high, but right. subtle. For months, I could only hear that click. And I always thought like, TV's broken for the first mm-hmm. week. And then I realized, oh, fuck, that was from that explosion in my ear. So obviously my hearing came back and I was able to hear that eventually. But now, I guess like something like that, I guess it's all relative, but it seemed as though that was a temporary thing.
Yeah.
Because it was outside the ear enough. But if that were closer to my inside my ear, like even, maybe right even next to my ear, I probably would have suffered some damage.
Possibly.
Right?
So what happens in a situation where what we call acoustic trauma, something like that is acoustic trauma, right? In your ear, the thing that looks like a cinnamon bun, the cochlea, looks like a snail. It has something called outer ear hair cells. We have like thousands upon thousands of these little guys, and they act like a preamp to sound.
Wow.
So when sound goes through your ear, hits your cochlea, it gets in your cochlea, I should say, these little hairs vibrate and they make it loud enough to go through the auditory chain up to your brain, because that's where hearing really happens. We hear with our brains, we don't really hear with our ears.
That's okay? A whole other discussion, right?
Yeah.
I got to have you back to talk about that. Oh,
right, that's a trip in itself. Now, yeah, that gets so convoluted, man. I don't know if I'd be the best person, because that's not what I specialize in. But when you have acoustic trauma, the first thing to go are these little hair cells. But keep in mind, we have tens of thousands of these things in our ears. When you do a hearing test, we test 8 frequencies. The human ear is capable of hearing from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. Mm-hmm. But the reason we don't test that is, one, you'd be there all day and you'd probably fall asleep.
Okay.
And two, we are worried more about speech, because the communication is what we're really communication specialists.
Okay.
So that's where a lot of like the speech frequencies are located. So that's why we test that. So my point is, sure, could some outer hair cells have been damaged during a period like that, like that little acoustic trauma incident? Yes. If you did a hearing test, though, it might not show up.
Interesting.
Because we only test 8 frequencies in 2 years.
Interesting.
You know, for the most part, I mean, there are some high frequency. Any audiologist listening, that's not true. Yeah, I know. I'm talking in generalities here.
Interesting, man. Okay. Interesting. Okay. What? By the way, one last question about when you were off.
Yeah, not a problem.
Mold, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Would that mold be like something I could take to get in-ear monitors?
Yes. What would happen is we would have to request them to send it back.
Interesting.
Because what happens is I literally put like a putty in your ear and I take an impression. Mm-hmm. of your ear canal, and I send it out to the company who makes them, and I usually they keep them on file, so because sometimes it doesn't happen all the time, but you get them and you're like, it doesn't feel quite right, then we just make slight adjustments and they know to make the adjustments where, because they have the ear molds, you know. But
right.
You could request it back, or at the time you're taking the ear mold, just say, hey, give me 2 sets. They might charge you a little extra for that, because obviously that's materials that you're using.
Yeah.
But just say, hey, you know, while I'm here, let's take 2 sets of each ear. That way I get to keep one, and then, you know, you get to do whatever you need to.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about it over the years. Like, if I had the money to spend, for sure, specifically with in-ears.
Yes.
I have so many, a handful of musicians, actually, who have told me, spend the money.
Yeah, I would agree with them.
They say, you don't even understand. You don't even understand the quality. And for them, it's not even just when you put on those Bose headphones, you're like, oh man, this is great.
Yeah.
But you're thinking in the sense of, I'm listening to music or a podcast, whatever. or watching a movie. This is, it's almost entertain, it's an entertainment thing.
Yes.
But for them, they're saying functionally on the gig, I never have to worry about monitoring ever.
Right.
And I control my own, like they'll have their own mixer next to them.
Yes. That,
and I was like, that sounds ideal. And if I had, yeah, for sure, I would love to have that. In fact, I'll be honest with you too, even recording at home. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's drummers that like to record. I'm sure they can relate to this, but depending on your setup, it's hard to get, and this is all dependent on even your computer. If you can get an actual EQ'd recording mix of your own sound, sometimes people's computers aren't fast enough to record, and because sometimes you have latency and all that shit.
Latency, yeah, I was just gonna say that, yeah.
Oh man, but in, like that's where in-ears are a little better because you hear the crispness of like something like the cymbals. But again, if you don't spend the money, you lose a lot of the low end.
Yes.
Right, because those, the technology that has to go into such a small little piece of machinery to get those low frequencies to pump out into your ear, that's what you're spending the money on. So I guess if we're talking about like earbuds, like Apple earbuds,
mm-hmm.
you're limited on the spectrum of the frequency range, the frequency spectrum. You're so limited to what you're going to hear.
Yeah, the frequency response. I mean, like you said, you can only put so much in something so little. And the ear.
It's air. Right?
And the thing is, too, it's like, it all depends on your ear. Like some people will demand, like I make the smallest hearing aid for them or like the smallest plug or whatever. And I'm like, part of it is up to the manufacturer, but part of it is also up to your ear. If you have a really small ear canal, mm-hmm. some of it's just going to have to sit outside, you know, it's going to have to sit in like that bowl of your ear. Because like you said, I completely agree. There's only so much you can do in something so little.
Would you say that if a musician were like, you know what, I actually have the money, I'd like to actually invest in ear monitors with a mold, would you suggest to them to go to an audiologist for the mold versus
hands down.
One for the company?
Hands down. Right now, a lot of companies, what I've found with inner ear monitors is that they're like, oh, you don't even need an ear mold. You download our app and somehow the app, like you hold your camera up to your ear. And I'm like, how is that accurate? Like, I don't see how they're doing that. Like, unless there's like, you know, like sonar radar rays or whatever coming out of your phone
that's weird.
And I doubt like a new startup company like that has the funds to even create that kind of technology.
Yeah.
Yes. For right now, you know, I can't speak for 10 years from now when technology gets better. But for right now, definitely go to an audiologist, get that professionally done. And they won't charge you an arm and a leg. Most clinics, at most for mold, $50 to $100, depending on the clinic.
You know, and you know what, man? Like, you've actually really, you've got me thinking more about the health of my ears. Because I you know, every time I'm having a conversation about what I do for a living and why I'm good at it, mm-hmm. it all comes down to, I always say, I've just learned to listen really well. I can listen deeply, and when you listen very closely to finite details, you just get better at identifying. For me, it would be like rhythms, fast, very very fast rhythms,
right.
Subtle in the background of a mix. But without the instrument of my ear, because they are, it is an instrument in itself. You got two of them. Oh, sorry.
Yep.
You got two of them.
Completely agree.
I don't have that skill anymore if that goes away. So,
right.
I mean.
Or it becomes really hard. And then you have to spend thousands on a pair of hearing aids to get it back, maybe.
And I've heard a few people say that it's a bummer. Having a music, being a musician and having to use hearing aid to even play music, it's a bummer. Cause
it's not natural.
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some great hearing aids out there and talented audiologists that know how to really, you know, manipulate sound to get to where you need to be. But for the most part, yeah, you know, I would somewhat agree with that statement. It's just because the sound isn't just going through your ear anymore and you're hearing it naturally. It's going through a microphone that is then being processed through a machine and then get, you know what I mean? So yes. Yeah, I mean, for people who are really sensitive in their ears and know, like musicians are, like, you're going to notice a difference. I can't lie. I can't say
so that. So to sum it up then, Mr. Curious, he recommends that you go to your audiologist now with no hearing problems.
Yes.
Get a mold.
Get a hearing test too.
Get a hearing test. Get a mold of your ear. Get proper ear protection plugs. He doesn't. You don't want to see them when they need when it's like urgent.
Nothing personal.
meaning. He's going to treat you. You're going to, you know, but you'd rather see them prevent problems.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
An ounce of prevention is, what is that saying? I don't even know.
Oh, I've never heard it.
Oh, it's like an ounce of a teaspoon of prevention is worth more than something like that, man. I felt like a Michael Scott. Like I just start a sentence and I hope it finds its way or something like that.
Yeah, somebody else quoted it, you know, like the Wayne Gretzky thing, and then
yeah.
I love that, dude. This is fascinating. I would love to have you on again to talk about the brain.
Yeah. I mean, that's a whole nother episode. I have to prepare for that one.
Because for sure, because you do. It is interesting. I always kind of tell my students, like, in your mind's ear, and some of them look at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? And that's the ability to play a sound in your mind that only you can hear. It's when you think of, I mean, visually, it makes sense to me because primally, that's how we survive. To survive in the primal world, humans needed to have a visualization, I guess, to know what to look out for, to remember that was dangerous, you know.
For sure.
But I mean, I guess it's interesting to play back something audio in your mind. It's like, it's weird to think about that we could do that.
Oh, the brain is crazy. And I just know about like a little bit of it, you know, like my little section of the brain. It's crazy. One of my favorite facts about the brain is that it named itself.
Oh. Wait, can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah. It named itself, right? Like, how else did we think of the brain? The brain did it. Or another favorite saying of mine about the brain is, the brain is the best organ, according to the brain.
You know? Oh shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what then? Like, we could go on such a tangent.
Yeah.
We could totally save it for the next.
Yeah.
Because you are coming back, man. I'm having you.
I'm happy to come back. This is a lot of fun.
It is interesting to think, the brain is doing shit when you think you're using your brain to focus on one thing. The brain is doing other things for you. You know, that gives you perspective to like really treat your body with respect, you know?
Yep.
Man.
If anyone else doesn't take anything away from anything else from this discussion, I think you just summed it up. Just treat all parts of your body, not just your ear, with respect for sure.
Yeah. Don't live that rock star life. You know, somebody like Dave Grohl, for instance, who I love Dave Grohl.
Yeah. Who doesn't love Dave Grohl?
Who doesn't? He's and he seems like a great dude too. Very entertaining. I've seen Foo Fighters countless times now. Every time I see them though, and I've noticed this after the last two times that I've seen them, every time I see him, his amplification, his guitar is overly loud.
Oh, is it?
It's right in the middle of the stage. So you hear, and you can hear the other, he's got two other guitar players and a bass. They now have a guy playing keys too, and like organ, drums, of course, but his is the loudest in the mix. He's talked about, he's like, oh, my ears are fucked. He's like, hearing damage, you know. And So, you know, it's like, I guess my point for bringing that up is even somebody like Dave Grohl could, his performance now, in my mind as a fan, nobody has to agree with me.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind as a fan, ugh, it's like, oh, turn down your fucking, you
know, yeah,
not
yeah.
good, you know, and he's suffering. His performance is suffering from that. So protect your fucking ears, people.
Yeah, I would love to be his audiologist, by the way. Sign me up.
Oh, I bet, dude. All right, Mr. Curious, thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on.
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun, and I look forward to another one in the future. And I'm serious about the music plugs. Hit me up.
Oh, I'm
we'll get you some.
I'm going to hit you up about that for sure. So yeah. To plug your podcast one more time, A Fleeting Frustration, please listen to that podcast. It's actually, and that's going to grow. The more that grows, I'm excited for you because I love the idea. So, and everybody start consuming this podcast.
Thank
it's going to be
thank
important.
Thank you so much.
One day. I really do believe that. All right, Mr. Curious, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. This is a fantastic podcast, fantastic show, and I look forward to the next one.
Thank you, sir. All Thanks. Right, but dumb biz to you, everybody.